Kristen Raymond Damian, followed by Georgiana Myers. They're ganging up on us.
Hello, this is Jesslyn Peters and Damian Scott, and I'm Kristen Raymond. We are all going to say a little bit. They actually are saying stuff, too. I'm here representing my family, my parents, who is Adrian Colgrove Raymond and Roland Raymond, and my mother, who is Cynthia Marshall. Also, my grandparents, Elizabeth and Gilbert Marshall, and my late grandfather, Willie Colgrove. They were raised near the river and off the nourishments and resources of the land. I'm also representing my future, who is my nieces and nephews. I hope that they have the ability and the privileges to also do what we do, which is fish and hunt off our land as well. We had sat down and decided to write a few of our comments and questions that we wanted to share offhand, which was, like I said, was the family. Right now, there is no water rights for fish unless they are endangered. Why must we allow the flow of the river to deteriorate until this happens? In the meantime, the quality of the health of the fish is declining. Humans who consume the fish are at risk to see a decline in their health as well. How sad. How sad the currently the river is a danger to humans, with the increasing cases of skin rash, liver poisoning, and tumor growth. The river management should take into consideration of the toxic impact that the current algae levels and the warning the river and the inhabitants are in serious danger. The river is sick. It is time for a health reform, and this managing the land and the river for future generations is practiced by the tribes along the river. The river tribes were the river's first caretakers, and I do feel and believe that it should continue with everybody. You know, it's something that we all utilize, and it's something that men pass on down to their sons and their grandchildren, and I hope that my grandchildren have the same.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jesslyn Peters, and I want to say something. Our water quality is terrible. It's sad to think that my children and grandchildren might not even be able to know what fish tastes like. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Damian Scott. Our water levels are so low that algae is growing everywhere. It is a thick green sludge on the sides of the river. Our river is so warm that the fish won't survive in it. We need more water. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all. Georgiana Myers, followed by Chris Quirnbach.
Iu Queen, now Georgiana Myers. I'm Yurok and Karuk, and I work for the Klamath Riverkeeper as their community organizer on the Undam the Klamath River campaign. I live in Klamath currently, but I've been raised along the river my whole life. And my family depends on the fish, like most people depend on electricity. The Klamath River is being destroyed by unclean water and flows that are inadequate. Every fishing season, things get a little bit worse. The water is warmer and lower. There are less and less fish. And now, most recently, toxic algae has reached the mouth of the river. Animals die, people get sick, smokehouses are empty, and yet nothing changes. I'm not going to sit here and argue about whose use of the river is more important. I came to ask the board to make sure and to help implement plans that will make our water clean and safe and swimmable. I don't think that those are dreams that are outside the box or too far to get there. Everybody is talking about where the water needs to go and who needs water and who doesn't. The bottom line is that we're downriver people, and the way that we believe, we always take care of the people below us and above us. We don't just try to think about what's happening on our part of the river. And so coming from Klamath at the very end of the river, that means we get whatever everybody from everywhere else in the basin puts into it. It comes through to Klamath. With the influx of the ocean, it stays a little bit clean. But this year, I came from the middle of the Klamath and moved to the end of it, where I had saw toxic algae. I had saw all those things before growing up there. And to watch people in Klamath see it for the first time was really disheartening. They came back from the net saying, our nets stink. There's stuff in the water. What's going on, Georgiana? You know about what's going on. and I said that the toxic algae had just gotten so bad that it had finally reached the end of the river. And that scared a lot of people, and it scared a lot of fishermen that would normally come up and be tourists, people that have been coming up there since they were little kids, and now they're old men, and they're bringing their little kids, and now they're not coming back because their dog got sick last time they came, a sore didn't heal on their hand when they went home, and all these bad things start happening. Our people are sick, our river is sick, and I understand that this is a huge basin, and I understand that the water that I love crosses state lines. But either way, it should be clean, and it should be cold, and it needs to be there for the fish. And most importantly, it should be there for everybody to enjoy, not just the fishermen, not just the farmers, not just those of us that swim and hang out in the river. But safe, clean water is pretty important to just about anybody that lives in this basin. And so I commend the board on the work that they've already done. I obviously am for undamming it, and I look forward to seeing more stringent rules about who and what can be dumped into the river, because as a downriver person, I deal with all those consequences. I deal with not being able to let my niece swim in it or not let my dog go near it or not going in it when I have cuts in my hands or changing a traditional fishing spot to a better one out of my area because the fish just aren't coming that far upriver. And I don't even live that far in. My parents, where they live, we live 11 miles in. And the fish didn't even hardly make it up there this year. So we were forced to go to the end of the river and catch them right there at the mouth. So I commend the board on the work that they're doing and what their staff's doing for the cause of the river. And I would just encourage you to remember that all this water flows somewhere, and some people downriver are dealing with deathly consequences because of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris, if you just hold 1 second. I had promised the speaker that she'd be third, and I thought I had the cards arranged. My apologies.
Oh, it's a beautiful drive. You can see the whole river all the way down.
Is that close enough to you?
No.
No. Ayakui, Nakna, Jean McCovey. I was born in 1951 in Hoopa on the reservation. And my Sangrian parents gave me to my aunt, my father's sister, because they wanted to work at the mouth of the Klamath River. There were 3 canneries. And so now that I'm 59 years old, there are no canneries there, with logging and the siltation and the things that happen with mining and whatnot. Our river is degraded. I come from the World Renewal Religion. The Karuk, the Hoopa, the Yurok, the Chulula, and the Wiat of Humboldt Bay all belong to this. So in 2002, our people and Pequon Creek had just finished the jump dance, the war between good and evil dance, the stomp out the evil dance. This was the job that Creator has given us. And so that was Sunday evening before dark, before the sunset. And so that Monday is when we started finding the salmon killed. 70,000 salmon adults were killed that year. 200,000 juvenile had also been killed the spring before that. And so when you think of the World Renewal Religion, you think of our prayers. We've done what Creator told us to do. Why we were put here. Why we chose to come here to be who we are. And so when we do the white deerskin dance and the flint carrier carries the flint across the dance ground, he cuts the world open. And we send the evil out to the end of the world. And then it's our prayers and our medicine that rebuilds the world. This is how come the anthropologists call us the World Renewal Religion. This is our job. But when you've done your job and the demise of 70,000 fish happen, it is us fighting evil, fighting greed, fighting the demise of the water, fighting the Department of Interior who sent the water to the farmers and not down the river. That happened in 2002. Pacific Corps bought an environmental lemon. There are supposed to be ladders on those dams. They should be in compliance with water quality now. Dragging the feet and coming into compliance is unacceptable. You cannot equate an anadromous fish with the potato or grain or what the farmers are producing. Creator gave them the ability to hone home, to come home to their natal streams. Both the Shasta and the other tributaries that come into the Klamath are races of fish. Through evolution, they come home to where they belong, where Creator meant them to be. Of all the five or six federal and state agencies that this Klamath River is involved in, stakeholder committees that they're involved in, none of these people, none of these committees can deal with the God-given right of a fish to hone on home to in its anadromous natal stream. So this is a moral issue. State administration, state agencies cannot never take that away from those fish. That is what they're meant to do. They came here to be sustenance for our people. That was their job. They chose to come here to be who they are. And so I would just like to leave this forum here with the idea of my prayer this morning. I invoke the spirituals of the North, those of purity, those of healing and rejuvenation. And I pray that the healing spirit come down on all of our heads, of all of those people who walked out of here, that the healing spirit would come through them and help them. But that the healing spirit would go down through the bottom of their feet to walk away from here, that they knew that they were the conduit between the spirit world and the physical. Because as human beings, we are the only ones that can pray. We're the only ones that dance for the continuation of creation. We choose the way we walk back to Creator. This is our job. And so it is up to you folks, it is up to the folks behind me to take it upon themselves as human beings to pray. It doesn't matter who taught you how to pray or how you pray. Just as long as you realize and empower yourself to walk in a good way, that you have to realize this is a moral issue. To administratively try to save that river is all you can do. And that's what's needed. And if you are taking too much water out of the river and the river runs hot, that is your choice. And that is not walking towards creation, and that's not recognizing the salmon's only God-given right is to return home. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie. Okay, Chris Pornbuck, followed by Gary Black.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I am Chris Kornbach. I'm a forester with Timber Products Company. We manage about 50,000 acres tributary to the Klamath River. So those are mostly timberland acres, and those are subject to the TMDL. And we have submitted a letter, and Stu Farber from our staff has also submitted a letter to the board regarding this issue. And I hope you get a chance to read and consider those comments. I do want to just touch on a few issues in the letter and give you a little update. Yesterday I was in Sacramento attending the Board of Forestry meeting, and there's been some mention of the actions the board took yesterday, and they have moved forward on a new rule package called the Anadromous Salmonid Protection Rules. Essentially permanent adoption of anadromous salmonid rules with significant additional mitigation measures for riparian areas. There's 30-foot no-cut zones along fish-bearing as well as non-fish-bearing watercourses. Significant protections for Class 3 watercourses, which are seasonal watercourses. a lot of road protection mitigations. I mentioned that just because that's kind of a late developing situation. I want to make sure the board's aware of the actions that the Board of Forestry has taken. Our primary concern with the TMDL, and I do want to commend the staff for the significant work. I will admit to not having read a lot of the modeling details, but I do commend staff for all the work they've done. And I do want to also emphasize that Timber Products is very committed to protecting all the beneficial uses of water during our management activities. But we do have a few concerns, and I do outline them in our letter. And our primary concern is with the third sentence on section 6.5.7.2. And this deals with a recommendation to expand the T&I rules, which are no longer in existence, but essentially expand the anadromous semi rules basin-wide. And I point out in the letter that basically that sort of expansion would apply the T&I rules up above Iron Gate Dam, essentially areas east of here. There's several drainages east of here, and I point out Butte Creek and Antelope Creek, that never drain into the Klamath River. So adoption of these T&I rules for the protection of temperature impacts within the Klamath River outside of where the anadromous fish are present or can be restored is just not appropriate. There is one major drainage, Shovel Creek, that I cite in the letter that does drain into the Klamath River above Iron Gate, and Timber Products has significant ownership in that drainage. And you'll see from the letter from Stu Farber, stream temperatures in Shovel Creek are 14 degrees C. Very cold. And these are through the utilization of the standard forest practice rules, not the anadromous fish forest practice. So I want to make sure this expansion of the T&I rules or the anadromous fish rules basin-wide is really not supported given the ground conditions, and in a lot of ways doesn't make any sense and represents a significant economic impact for us. And it really goes beyond the intent of the Board of Forestry when they adopted the rules, which was crafting for the presence of anadromous salmonids. The second concern we have was with some prescriptive standards that occur within the implementation plan for the TMDL. That's in section 6.5.7.3. Rather than adopting a separate set of prescriptive standards from the forest practice rules, we would rather see the TMDL rely on the forest practice rules, especially given these new set of rules just adopted yesterday. If you look at the Class 3, there's a protection measure in the TMDL for Class 3 that talks about protection of channel zone trees. The rules adopted yesterday have a protection measure for the protection of channel zone trees, but it goes to bank stability trees as well. But the language is a little different than what would be in the TMDL prescriptive measure. So you can see that timberland owners are going to be struggling with two different sets of regulations trying to achieve the same objective. And that's just going to cause confusion. It's going to be costly for us to implement, and it's just not necessary. So in summary, I'd really, really encourage the draft TMDL implementation plan to rely upon the forest practice rules, even if they're not certified as equivalent, but at least to rely on those rules for implementation, so we're not dealing with duplicative and confusing and overlapping and unnecessary prescriptive measures. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Gary Black, followed by Molly Jane.
Good afternoon. My name is Gary Black, and I'm here representing the Montague Water Conservation District. And I'll be short because I know you guys have other issues. Appreciate the opportunity. We strongly contend that the draft TMDL brings additional impairments and load changes into the Scott and the Shasta. And We appreciate David Leland's acknowledgement of that potential today, and we're encouraged by staff's potential reconsideration of that scenario. However, one of the recommendations provided by staff was a basin-wide waiver. And we feel that first, staff must prove that the Shasta is impaired for sediment and the other impairments identified in the Klamath. The 303 delisting process was circumvented, in our opinions, by this process, and the investigations need to incur and the data needs to be backed to prove that the Shasta is indeed impaired for sediments and the other impairments of the Klamath. We just want you guys to follow the rules developed. We're not a resistant entity. Both communities are trying to be as proactive as possible, still stay in business. But we do want to follow the rules that are set up for water quality and 303 delisting and the listing process. We feel like it probably was something that wasn't thought out very well, and we feel like maybe we got lumped. But we don't do lumped. We all deserve independent attention. I realize the burden that the board and staff have in meeting the consent decree and everything else, and I can't even begin to fathom what that means and what a workload that is. But we can't be lumped either. Each watershed has its own characteristics, and they deserve to be identified, quantified, impairments listed where applicable and not where not. So I think what this all boils down to, and I think what you're hearing in different versions throughout the entire day, is that this needs more time. And I don't know how the board gets more time, the consent decree gets more time, or anything else. But in order for all the communities to buy into the process and to buy into the recommendations, the load rates, we just need more time. And I think specifically you're hearing today that we need further investigation into the Klamath modeling, which I know nothing about, but it sounds like, and from what I read in the comments, it sounds like a very contentious issue. And we need to consider the overlay of the Klamath impairments on the existing TMDLs in the Scott and the Shasta, and some that I'm not familiar with up in Oregon. And we need to decipher those and figure out what's workable. Again, I think all the communities here want to figure out what's right for all the communities within the Klamath. But we have to follow process, and we have to prove our case. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Garrett. Molly Jane, followed by Kathy McCovey.
Ayuki, Nani Thuyum, Molly Jane, Nani Ishkesh Karuk Ara. Hello, my name is Molly Jane. I am a Klamath River Karuk. I've been attending water board meetings for years. When I began, my oldest son was 1 year old. He is 6 now and is following his grandpa and uncles to the river to fish and pray and learn, as our people have done since time immemorial. I came here today to ask that the water board ensure TMDLs allow him to pass this tradition to his children by prescribing regulations that will provide the varied dependence of the Klamath with a clean, healthy river system. I leave you with one last consideration. Knowing what you know about the water quality of the Klamath River, would you send your children and grandchildren to swim in and eat from the river? Will you sentence my children to that? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Kathy McCovey, followed by Shannon Flaherty.
Ayuki, my name is Kathy McCovey. I was born and raised on the Klamath River. I am a landowner in Happy Camp, California, and I also own land down in Humboldt County, and the entirety of the Klamath River passes through my two parcels. I have a degree in archaeology and anthropology. I have a degree in forestry. I'm a master's student at environment and community. And why am I getting all this education and training? It is to help the river and to help the people. And I really commend you folks on and support you on what you're doing. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I thank you. You know, I have to represent myself here. I sat and I listened to Marsha Armstrong, who's supposed to represent me. I cannot believe the things that came out of that woman's mouth. And I just want to say that I've been inspired to become involved in politics because of that. Now, let's get back to the other subject. I support the numeric limits the Water Board staff has proposed. I support buffers to protect thermal refugia for fish from disturbances such as your staff has proposed. I support regulations on suction dredging to protect water quality as an important element in healthy fish habitat. I support regulations on cattle grazing, including prohibition cows in the Klamath River and the creeks that feed it. I also support a protective buffer imposed on grazing based on best available science about impacts to riparian vegetation and water quality from livestock. Please ensure that the mainstem Klamath TMDLs are tough enough to deal with this problem in a meaningful way. As your staff has identified, this means the TMDL must prescribe radical reduction in nutrient inputs as straight drain, including nutrient loading from the Lost River. Please do everything in your power to ensure that the interim conditions for the interim conditions are followed. Water quality and quantity at the mouth of the Scott Shasta River needs to meet Klamath mainstem TMDL standards to control temperature increases, dissolved oxygen, and reduced algae in those two tributaries and the main stem. More flows are needed in the Scott and Shasta. Dewatering of these streams must be addressed so that the nutrient reductions in the Scott, Shasta, and mainstream TMDLs can be realized. No water in the stream is not an excuse for inaction. And I went to the Scott River about maybe 11 years ago. And I was really surprised. I was up in the headwaters. There was no water in the river. It was cow pee. You know, what we're facing right now, I heard a long time ago when I was younger that we would be fighting over water. I didn't think that was true. But here we are. And we all have to cooperate. You talk about the models and science. I've worked for a resource management agency for 30 years. I'm heavily involved in the modeling. I see it all the time on wildfires. And you have to be really careful about what information goes in, because they always say garbage in, garbage out. In environment and community program, I learned that there really is no one person that has the right answer. It's the answer that has the most information and science to back it. I've also heard a lot about science today. And I looked up science. As an anthropologist, I'm always posing these questions to myself. What is science? What is culture? What do these words mean that these people are always throwing around? So I went to Webster's. And science basically boils down to observations, you know, looking at things, wondering what's going to happen, watching when it happens. And what I want to tell you is that the Native people on the Klamath River have been there for hundreds of years, thousands of years. I'm an archaeologist. I know this. They are scientists. We are Native scientists. We have observed the river and the animals. We have culture. Culture is the transformation of information to people to survive within an ecosystem. You see the people here today, the Indian people? We're coming to let you know. We're the canary in the mine shaft. We're coming to let you guys know that our water is so polluted, I can't let my dog in the water. That's terrible. And I really don't want to see other people's lifestyles, you know, change, and I feel bad about that. But we're here begging you to please hold steady. Listen to your staff. Because I am a scientist, and I have a lot of education under my belt. And I've been listening to this, and I've been listening to what your staff has said. And I'm very proud of you folks. I really am. You guys are doing a good job, and you've got a good heart, and you're looking at the information, and you're making good decisions. And I support you 100%, and thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Shannon Flaherty, followed by Dana Colgrove.
Miklesnak. My name's Shannon Flaherty, and I'm representing myself. I wanted to say that I see the need for setting a total maximum daily load in the Klamath River simply by looking at the river. By driving by the middle of the Klamath, it's pretty obvious that something needs to be done. You don't have to be a scientist to see that nutrient loading is a problem. And I would have a little more input about temperature if it were safe to swim in. I want to commend you all for all the effort you've made in setting the total maximum daily loads for this river. But I want to state, too, that it is really imperative that enforcement be part of the plan. By Pacific Corps' own admission, if the only way to achieve the TMDLs is to remove the dams, clearly these outdated dams are an enormous source of pollution, and no one really should have that right to profit from violating water quality. I would also like to address previous comments from the Siskiyou County supervisors that increased regulation would create an atmosphere of fear and expose families to uncertainty in Siskiyou County. I think that they neglected to consider an important contingency of people in Siskiyou County, the Native people. The indigenous people up and down the river have experienced a climate of fear for hundreds of years as resources have been appropriated by outside forces. As far as living with uncertainty, downriver peoples can be certain that unless their lifeblood, the Klamath River, is cleansed of the pollution flowing in it currently, the life that feeds them will not thrive. The campsite rule is to leave a place better than you found it. It's a pretty basic rule. We usually learn it in kindergarten and we try to keep to it in established areas like campsites. But this rule should be followed with water as well. And if this rule were being followed, if the water that people used upriver were being put back in even just a slightly better condition, the Klamath would not be in the condition it was in. And there would be no need for the bureaucracy that you guys have been participating in all this time to develop these TMDLs. And it's pretty obvious that the job you're doing is pretty important and definitely necessary. So I encourage you to establish the draft TMDL and enforce it. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Shannon. Dana Colgrove. After Dana, we're going to take a break.
Good afternoon.
But that doesn't give you a license to go on and on and on and on.
I'm Dana Colgrove. I represent the Klamath River Justice Coalition today. We're here basically because our water is dirty, unusable. There's no fish. The fish are not surviving in the water. I encourage you guys to make a stronger TMDL. I never heard nothing about no drought years in this whole talk today. Are you guys including the drought years in the TMDL? Because the water flows up and down and there's no water. I also wanted to know what happened to the TMDL in the Scott River, because there's no water in the Scott River for like 5 or 6 miles. You can go and walk and not get your feet wet. There's pools of little fish. The California Department of Fish and Game came and took out all the big fish and supposedly threw them in a dumpster somewhere. This is on a need-to-know basis kind of thing. I walked it myself. Why are you guys having TMDL meetings and there's no water there? 50 yards over, there's nice green alfalfa fields being saturated. This is a groundwater, surface water issue. I want you guys to like try to fix that. Is that added in your TMDLs? Does anybody know how many wells are being drilled 50 yards from the river and draining the river? Another thing, I wish you guys would hurry up because I'm tired of not being able to swim in the river, not being able to use it. And I encourage you guys to, like the Pacific Corps guy said, nothing's going to work except for to take out the dams and make the water better. So my message today is no amount of stalling is going to stop the dam from falling.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dana.
And I have some extra T-shirts if you guys want one.
All right. We are going to take a break for, we'll say 2:15, and then some, but And it's, when we come back, it'll be Nita Still, followed by David Hellowell. So, with that, Nita.
I want to thank you for being here and allowing us to speak this long. Those guys aren't back yet, and I wanted to ask them a question, but I don't know if any of you guys have heard about Gail Whitsett's geologic report about the Klamath River. That needs to be taken into consideration.
Okay.
And also in 1851, John Gibbs traveled the Klamath River. He was, you can get that off the internet, his whole report. When he was in the Siskiyou area and on the lower Klamath, they discovered that a lot of the Indians were sick. They had eye problems and digestive problems. And also historically, the Klamath Indians came down to the mouth of the Klamath, of the Shasta River, to get their fish because there were no fish up there. And in the early 1900s, I can't remember the department, but it was a federal department of the Bureau of Interior. For 7 years, they caught most of the salmon going upstream at Klamathon. That's the bridge that you go over on the back road to get to Hornbrook. And so for 7 years, salmon weren't swimming up there. And that was about 1912 to 1917. It was in that area. The reason for the... the Klamath River has always been low, warm, and had algae in it, I'm sure, because of the volcanic explosions up there. They put a lot of phosphorus in the ground, and phosphorus causes the algae to grow, as well as warm water. And since it was polluted in 1851, I would assume that it's been polluted its whole since its birth. And the salmon have been declining for the last 30 to 50 years. On the East Coast, they're also declining, and up in Alaska. Anyhow, I discovered that the salmon is over 20 million years old. There are two different ways that algae can be removed. One is by aeration, and the other one, a guy from Australia sent Craig Tucker a message of how you could remove the algae. And I read that Craig's reply was he didn't care about the algae, he just wanted the dams removed. There was a study done about the 2002 fish kill, and they said the Fish and Game, State Fish and Game, said it was from the two diseases that the salmon get, and low and warm water. You can get that report off the internet also. Sorry, I wrote all these notes. I had something written, and when I heard everybody talking, I started writing all kinds of things down. And I feel that the government should be more concerned about the people and our lives, liberties, property, and economy, as well as our lands and waters up here, because they're being manipulated by the Endangered Species Act, and they're using that as a tool to do the things that they want to do, because it's a law. So we need to have some laws changed. And I have information also that the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, which are on the, there are 10 of them on the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, They want to rewild this area up here and create a wilderness, and they're using the Endangered Species Act to do so by saying that salmon are endangered. And if you want more information, you can look up the Wildlands Network, which will give you the information, give you a lot of information, and the Yellowstone to Yukon. That's another thing the environmentalists are doing. So, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Nita. David Hallowell, followed by Regina Chichinzola.
Good afternoon. My name is David Hallowell. I have the fishing vessel Corregidor out of Eureka. And I'm not fishing today. I didn't fish yesterday. And I haven't wet a line in 3 years. I started fishing in 1968 for salmon and bought a boat in 75. Shortly thereafter, restrictions started coming in. I fished in front of Eureka in those days that Kevin was talking about when you'd see 600 boats. You could see boats as far as the eye could see in all directions. And then you'd see 600 boats tied to the dock in Eureka, spending money, going to the boatyards. We had four boatyards, four or five marine stores, and two fuel docks, and various other support industries. We now have one boatyard that's hanging on by a thread and one marine store. The way the seasons developed in the 70s when they began the restrictions, I tried to stay home, and pretty soon I was forced to leave home and leave my children and run 300 miles to the south in order to make a living, which wasn't very pleasant. And now at this point, there is no place to go to make a living. Somebody mentioned earlier about that the fishery had become high-tech, and actually in the case of trolling, it's become low-tech because it's exactly the same technology that's been used for 50 or 100 years, except that we've taken the barbs off the hooks. So we're going the other direction. Taking the barbs off the hooks allows you to release the smaller salmon so they're unhurt and they can continue to grow. And the restrictions began in the 70s. And at that time, and for many years, the government refused to entertain the idea that habitat could be involved. Many of us here are involved in growing things, whether it be fish or cattle or crops. We know we have to take care of the nursery. In fact, the habitat issue was not allowed into the record. For years, the restrictions increased. The answer has always been overfishing from the government. The government has become so entrenched in the commitment to the concept that it has change the definition of overfish to mean any fish stock that is stressed to the point of diminishment. Therefore, regardless of the reason, fishermen get the blame. However, you can only flog a dead horse for so long. When it becomes scattered all over, you just look ridiculous. Anyone who looks at the river knows it's not right. Money can buy expert testimony to the contrary, but that does not make it so. The river is like a homeless person in our community who we ignore, seedy and down at the heel. Well, this homeless person is our responsibility. It's dried up, overheated, and compromised with nutrients. If we want a healthy river, we have to take care of it. Stalling around only makes the problem worse. We are like a bunch of alcoholics who are going to stop drinking next week. If we want a healthy river, we have to stop drinking today. We have to stop drinking now. And I think that probably about covers it. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate your work.
Appreciate it.
Looks like it's going to start happening.
In a long time. Regina, followed by Gary Reinerson.
Hello, my name is Regina Chickazola. I'm here as an interested member of the public. I woke up here very early to come here, and just one comment about the structure today. I think the normal structure of first come, first serve is a lot better of a structure because it seems to fit people's schedules better. Thanks. So I wanted to start by saying that I am a long-term resident of Siskiyou County. I just moved out of Siskiyou County about 10 miles over the border about 3 months ago. And Marsh Armstrong does not represent me and does not represent most of the downriver communities. Siskiyou County has a lot of economic interests, and a lot of it also has to do with fisheries and different restoration and tourism and things of that nature. It's not only ag. I understand ag is important, but it's not the only thing. Another thing I want to say about the economics in this is that there's no economic analysis of what it means to people to be able to not get sick from getting in the river. When you look at hospital bills for tribal members who have diabetes because they can't eat fish, if you look at hospital bills of people who have E. coli from the river or toxic algae has given them rashes, that's something also to think about as far as economics of the river go. I think that should be included in the cost-benefit analysis if we are looking at economics. There's many ways to look at it. I'm very disturbed that I only read about 9 lines about flow in the Klamath River when I was looking at the documents. It seems to me, when I read over water rights, it says water rights should be reasonable and beneficial, and that is not the way the water rights in the Klamath Basin are looked at. The state of California actually regulates the water, and there needs to be more flow in order for the river not to be polluted. The Shasta River TMDL says lack of water is a source of pollution. And obviously, when you're looking at dissolved oxygen and temperature, that is the case. I also would like to see groundwater pumping more fully addressed in this. Anyone who's been to the Lower Klamath Refuge area has seen that there's so much groundwater pumping that it actually forms its own rivers. And a lot of times the ditches from all the groundwater pumping will have way more water than you'll see in any of the tributaries. So I think that needs to be looked at further. I would also like to mention that I am very, very worried about Oregon's role in this. Oregon does not regulate agriculture. And I've had a lot of discussions with the state of Oregon on the TMDL. And they have said any load has to come out of point source. And point sources are things like sewage treatment plants. Well, obviously in the Klamath Basin, the agriculture and the cows and things, the non-point is the real problem. So if we're going to have the typical 10-10 agriculture plants that they use in Oregon to try to meet the TMDL, there's no way that it's going to actually meet its criteria, and I think it's up to the state of California to hold Oregon accountable for their pollution loads and to say that that water needs to meet California standards when it flows into the state. Along with that, I'm very concerned about the Straits Drain. As you guys probably know, sometimes when it reaches the Klamath River, it is pure ammonia. It reeks of pure ammonia. And there is often fish kills in the Keno Reach where there's no dissolved oxygen at all and all the fish in the river die. We're going to be sending salmon up into that reach, which is going to happen because fish passage is mandatory in the dam negotiations or in the dam documents. Then the fish will probably die in that reach. So the Lost River, as you guys know, comes in and out of California, so California can do a lot to reduce that load that goes into the Straits Drain. Along with that, I just wanted to say that I find it really disturbing that PacifiCorps says that their model is okay for a federal EIS, a federal NEPA document that only happens every 50 years. That's the model that they used in that EIS, and now they're saying it's not good enough for the state of California. I'm not saying the model's good or bad. I'm not a modeler, but it seems to me like they're admitting that they're deficient in all of their studies that have gone into what they're saying, the dam relicensing so far. And I find that very disturbing. I think it's really telling that they said the only way for the load to be reduced to the point that the TMDL says it should be is for dam removal to occur, because I agree with that. So I'm very shocked they said that. The last thing is I would like to make sure that as far as sediment loading goes, that road removal is seriously considered on Forest Service lands especially. The Forest Service is mandated to remove roads anyway, and in the middle Klamath, there's about, some of the watersheds have 5 miles of road per mile of forest, and there is some serious problems that are occurring in the fisheries because of that. A creek that would be example is Beaver Creek, which is a major coho tributary. So on that, I thank you so much for all the work you've put in. Even though I am saying critique right now, I've realized how far this process has come. I really appreciate how much I personally have been able to comment on this and how many meetings you've had to make sure that the community is listened to. I feel that everyone wants to do the right things and work together. I really hope it can happen. However, the Clean Water Act is not voluntary, it's mandatory, and it's been an atmosphere of lawlessness on the Klamath River for as long as I've been experiencing it and as long as anyone I know have been experiencing it. And there is no other watershed in California I've seen where the lawlessness that happens here happens. So I really hope that while we're working together, we also realize that we need to save this river. The law is not a voluntary thing. There's no other laws that I can't just go steal something and not go to jail. And I'm not saying anyone should go to jail or get in big trouble, but if people repeatedly won't comply with the TMDL and won't comply with water quality standards, there has to be enforcement and there has to be benchmarks, and we have to work towards that. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Regina. Gary Reinerson, followed by Rick Butler.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board and staff, my name is Gary Reinerson. I'm with Green Diamond Resource Company. I'm also a registered professional forester. I wish this board luck moving forward with this. You've got lots of folks who have very diverse needs who rely very heavily on this, the biggest drainage in this region, which of course includes lots of minor tributaries as well as the Trinity and the South Fork of the Trinity. So I wish the board well as you move forward with this weighty decision on a river that so many rely on. That said, we Green Diamond Resource Company have been working with the federal and state agencies to put together a plan that to address salmon needs and to address the road conditions and provide improvements to those road conditions as well as to habitat conditions. We've been working with the Yurok tribe on restoration projects in the Lower Klamath. Our lands lie below the confluence of the Trinity and the Klamath. There north and to the west on either side of the river. And those lands are now covered by a habitat conservation plan that was approved in June of 2007. In March of 2008, we received a consistency determination for coho salmon from the Department of Fish and Game. So all three federally listed species, coho, chinook, and steelhead, are covered by our federal habitat conservation plan, as well as the coho, which is the state-listed species under the consistency determination with the Department of Fish and Game. Our plan includes enhanced stream buffers and stream zones, increased geologic review and geologic and special measures on areas of geologic sensitivity, as well as a very comprehensive road upgrade, road assessment program, road monitoring program, and also identifying which roads should be maintained in the long term and should be put to bed or decommissioned. And that's a very long process. We are just in the final stages of developing LIDAR imagery, which allows us to be very site-specific and to maintain a very comprehensive and complete inventory of the road systems. What we would like to do, because these rules are recognized already by the Department of Fish and Game and by the Board of Forestry as being, because they are equal to and in most cases superior to the current forest practice rules, they are exempt from the forest practice rules essentially that control the road standards and control the stream buffers, because they are determined to be standards that are at least equal to or superior to those regulations. Because of that, and because of their recognition by the federal agencies and by the state agencies, we would like to submit that these standards that we apply on our lands within the Klamath Basin, or within the area covered by our Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan, therefore be recognized as meeting load allocations for the Klamath TMDL. And we've requested that in writing. You should have that in your binders, as well as a 13-page document that's attached that goes through all of our Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan measures that are implemented to be consistent with that plan. So as we are working with your staff on also the development of a of a property-wide WDR, and especially for our roads system. But this request is unique to the Klamath because it does contain not quite 40% of our ownership in California. But it doesn't cover is the Trinity and the South Fork. Our aquatic plan does not include the ownerships that we have in those two drainages. The other thing I'd request of this board is to have staff take a hard look at the Board of Forestry rules that were just passed in 2009 and Endemic Salmon Protection Measures. Those rules were designed by and written by the Department of Fish and Game and the Department of Forestry as a co-effort. They represent those departments' efforts or a representation of what they believe to be for adequate protection measures for some salmonids. And I'd suggest while every point may not be equal to the recommendations by your staff or what measures should be incorporated for forestry and for watercourse buffers, I'd suggest collectively they meet or may exceed those standards that your staff is is requesting. Excuse me. Also, I think would be beneficial, there's a lower Klamath sediment TMDL pending because of this TMDL, although it's focused on water temperature and water quality and chemical impairments, it also, through anti-degradation, includes sediment. You look at pool loss of water quality due to sediment as well as pool filling, which results in increased temperatures. Therefore, it would make a lot of sense to combine those two TMDLs and to move forward with them simultaneously for the lower Klamath because they're both impairments that have the potential to adversely affect salmonids. And it would make a lot of sense rather than do this all again for the lower Klamath to incorporate that at this time. And that goes hand in hand with looking at the opportunities that are out there today to coordinate between the Board of Forestry regulations, the DFNG regulations, your water quality regulations, and the TMDL requirements. We have most landowners now, forest landowners, have to get four different permits, and the TMDLs are just another layer on top of those permits. And anything that can be done to help truncate that, to make that more efficient, more cost-effective, would be greatly appreciated, both from, I guess, myself as a taxpayer as well as as a landowner. So appreciate the time to make the comments. So thank you.
Gary, when you say lower Klamath, separate TMDL,
it was a sediment TMDL pending.
Referring to the Klamath Glen sediment listing?
Yes.
Okay.
So it only applies to the lower reaches of the Klamath.
And listen closely, but I didn't quite hear. You were hoping that what your company has worked on can be considered to meet these requirements of the TMDL. Do you find that there are requirements in the draft TMDL that are outside that don't work?
Collectively, we believe that our standards for the implementation of our habitat conservation plan collectively meet your objectives for this TMDL. There may be points above and below the line, so to speak, but collectively, the objectives are being met.
All right.
In our opinion.
Okay. Anybody else?
Thank you,
Gary. Rick Butler, followed by Bruce Shoemaker.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rick Butler. Here as a private citizen, but a lot of love for this county, this land. I appreciate particularly the people that aren't paid to be here as well as the people that are paid to be here coming out today. I had some notes. I've been writing all over them. I'm going to start with history. My history has been since 1955. I've been in the Klamath River multiple times every year, swimming, inner tubing, occasionally raft, maybe five times in a raft. Point being, immersed in the water throughout anywhere from Memorial Day into the end of September, depending on weather. I have no problems with health. I question the people that bring forward all the illness, all the sickness. Do we have hospital records, health, county health department records, the sick and dying animals? Do we have animal control or county health records? Is this conjured up or is it real? I would like to see or hear it because, again, I've had a couple head of cattle in the past. I've had a couple head of horses. I've had dogs. You know, we play in a river because that's what people do. The one lady talked about the cattle not getting in the river upstream, but yet she says she wants to put her dog in the river. I'm not sure the correlation there of to the contamination. Going back to my history thing, I'd like to go back way back. We're coming out of something like the fifth ice age. Things have happened. It's a cyclic world. I don't care whether you worship this god or that god, Mother Earth. We have cycled through droughts, which we're in now. I can take you within the city limits of Wairika and show you fossil beds. I can take you right on the banks of the Klamath River up by the rest area, show you fossil beds. There's a little town called Dinosaur, a little village, on the border of Utah and Colorado where they dig mastodons out. Where was agriculture's imposition on the environment then? The operation of vehicles. Where was mankind's industry destroying the world when all those major species down to the little micro shells stuck in the dirt banks up here? I think it's a little pompous of us to think that we can completely change the world, stop the world. Going back to history, Anita mentioned one man's journal. There was a horse soldier that came through an exploration, again, back in the 1800s. In his journal, he wrote, and this was above Klamath Falls, that we rode and rode and rode till we could no longer ride, could not find water for the animals. We had to share our canteen water in hopes that we could find water the next day. In case you don't know it, Klamath Falls, that whole area up there, is in between volcanoes. Lots of geothermal activity to the point that the city of Klamath Falls, I'm sure they're still there, used to pipe steam heat throughout the city that residents and business could attach to for free. They also have no snow removal for their streets, even though it's in a freezing, terribly cold place, because those steam heated streets don't collect ice and snow. Point being, Klamath Lake, which is part of the Klamath River, is within the city limits of Klamath Falls. The water is hot, if not, I shouldn't say hot, is warm, before it ever enters California, before it ever enters our dam system. Our antiquated dam system, we don't even use 50% of the available power out of that dam. How is it antiquated when we don't even use it? And without the dams, we talk about low flows. This time of year, in past years, back when I was younger, I could walk across the lower end of our bar and have water maybe 5 inches up on my feet. Without the dam system to collect and store water, you are not going to have flows. In fact, the dams, the people running them, are required to save water for the fall runs to facilitate the fish coming up. So to me, taking the dams out is a terrible, terrible experiment because nobody knows what really the TMDLs are naturally. Nobody took this before. We have your study. We have somebody else's study. We have USGS, fungus, algae, all these stories about people getting sick. There's Japanese firms that come over here and buy that stuff and turn it into health food and bring it back and sell it to people for a big dollar thing. That's a real story. Again, back in history, when the Klamath River was made famous for being the king of the salmon, they were hydraulic mining. Is written in many books, the river ran red with the soil. Why red? Because red is rust. Rust is from iron. Iron is in the layer just above the gold ore. So as they were hydraulic mining with big water cannons, just gushing the dirt off the hillsides, just like they did up around Grass Valley, Auburn, the river was running red and the fish still found their way up. Again, it's a cyclic thing. We talk about this area, that area. About the beginning of this century, the cold stream in the ocean moved up to the Gulf of Alaska, and they were having unprecedented catches of salmon while ours were going away. Again, it is a changing world that I'm not sure that we can stop. But I sure don't want to see all that infrastructure that's been put in with various companies and taxpayers' money that generates electricity, generates money for our county money, roads, you know, little things like that, health department, little things like that. Our entire financial infrastructure is going downhill rapidly. When I first opened my business, We had 5 car dealerships. One was a truck dealership. We're down to 2. We had 5 parts stores. We're down to 2 parts and 1 truck store. We had 4 muffler shops. We're down to 1. Why? Because we can't substantiate enough business here to keep these businesses alive. While they talk about tourism downriver, the Syed Valley store, campground, cafe, it's all but gone. What does that mean? Without the cafe, the Meals on Wheels deal for the infirm and the old folks doesn't exist because the cafe cannot stay open. There's not enough money for them to stay open and still help the elderly and the infirm down there. Now with the suction dredge van, which is the stupidest thing, if you brought a vacuum cleaner in here right now, vacuumed up that floor, took the bag out, and dumped it over, it'd be what a suction dredge does. They take nothing but the gold from the river. They add nothing. They loosen the soil. What do they do when they loosen the gravels in the soil? They make nice, soft beds for the fish to lay their eggs in. They also dig holes, which are cool spots. But yet, some self-anointed entity has decided that dredges are horrible, terrible things because of all this environmental stuff. And with that added in there, the nice lady who mentioned all the water going all over the place up at the wildlife reserve, Klamath Falls. Yeah. And who's driving that? More environmental wacko stuff that we're going to get all the water we can. We're going to take it while we can because then we can attract more birds. It's been a few years, but I was in my car listening to the radio, driving through southwestern United States. They were begging. Alaska was begging people to come to Oklahoma and Texas and kill the snow geese. We had provided so much habitat for the snow geese that when they go back to Alaska, Alaska didn't have the, with their short grow season, their infrastructure for the geese up there was going away. And they were afraid that they would lose that and therefore lose the geese. They were paying people to come shoot geese. No license, no anything. I have a whole lot more to say, but all I can say is I think it is asinine to take out an infrastructure that's in place that provides hydroelectricity, which we greatly need. Solar and wind power is pretty much wholly subsidized and undependable. I mean, drought's a little undependable, but wind and sun are very undependable. And the water for the fish. And going back to God, who made who God that the fish in the river are more important than the fish in the lake? They're different species in the lake. All of the wildlife that's adapted to those lakes, where are they going to go for that extra shoreline, that extra green grass, that extra water when it's all out in the ocean because nobody had enough sense to save? One of the biggest problems in our world is we spend. We don't save enough. We're not saving. When those dams come out, we're not saving water for when we need it. And one more last jab and I'll quit. The Upper Klamath Basin, when the Bureau of Reclamation put that farmland in, they drained a swamp, a sick, disease-infested swamp, combined that with arid desert, and made some of the most fertile land for agriculture in the world. How did you get to own that? You had to be a veteran of World War I or World War II, come forward with 2 letters of basically recommendation, and $1,000. With that, your name would be put in a huge pickle barrel, and if your name was drawn out, you had those documents, you had the $1,000, you got your piece of land, and you got a deed with water in perpetuity. Those farmers and those that worked their butts off for years, generations, on a promise from the government. You ask why maybe we get a little nervous about government agencies? That was cut off a few years ago. We had a thing came through town called the Bucket Brigade. I did a spaghetti feed to try to support the cost of that Bucket Brigade, that big, huge bucket. If you go to Klamath Falls, go up the courthouse. There's a bigger than life. It took a lowboy trailer to haul across the western United States to represent the fact that they couldn't even get a bucket of water after they had been promised water in perpetuity. thank you again for your consideration, and please do listen to all of us. I know it's a big job, but there's a lot at stake here. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Bruce Shoemaker? All right. We'll hold off a second. We're going to change the tapes.
Hi, I'm Melina Marvin. I am the Outreach and Science Director for Klamath Riverkeeper. And I just want to note that when we come here, we're representing over 4,000 supporters around this basin and on the coast and the fishing communities and throughout Oregon and California who value the Klamath River and all the various services and resources it offers the general public. And I want to, before I go into the comments that I have, I want to just acknowledge all the people who couldn't comment because they didn't have the time in their workday to wade through everyone else. And I approached the chairman earlier in the meeting and tried to get some of these people in and couldn't. And I think in the future we got to figure out a way. You know, people make a major sacrifice in their personal lives to come here, and it's my job to get them here. I'm the one who's sending your announcements out to these 4,000 people and letting them know this is happening. Come have your say. I don't care what it is, but come have your say, because this impacts you too as a river user and someone who cares about the Klamath. And so when I'm on the phone and the email for the last couple of weeks trying to get people here and they come and then they can't speak before they have to go back to work, it reflects poorly on me as well. And it's a little bit of an insult to have to listen to 6 or 7 representatives from Siskiyou County repeat the same thing over and over again while we have people with distinct stories who got to drive home and didn't get to say what they had to say. And one of those people, Dennis Specht, came because he was camping on the Klamath River last week, decided to go for a swim even though it's posted toxic, and ended up covered in a rash and had to go to the doctor as a result of it. And I think those are valuable stories, perhaps. You know, I don't want to weight one person's input more than another, but I don't need to hear Marsha Armstrong repeat what the Siskiyou County supervisor before her said, when there's you know, 100 great stories about Klamath that you guys need to hear because you don't live here and you don't understand what it's like for those of us who are dealing with the problems on this river on a day-to-day basis. Some other folks who couldn't make it are members of the recreational rafting community. This is high season for them and they're all out working, but I received several emails from those guys, outfits in Mount Shasta, Ashland, Byrica area. You know, give them hell, let them know we need that river cleaned up. We're tired of getting ear infections. You know, we're tired of having to make water quality excuses to our clients and our guests that come here from far away to enjoy this supposedly pristine wilderness habitat. I also want to make a note that I don't think you guys need to pander to Siskiyou County. These guys have made a pretty clear demonstration that they're not into the TMDL. They're not wanting to cooperate in many ways. We have been trying to start a volunteer water quality monitoring program with support from the State Water Board, both in the swamp office and in the citizens monitoring office, who has noticed that Northern California and the Klamath in particular have no citizen water monitoring, which is a great way to help with TMDL monitoring and implementation. And all we have heard from Siskiyou County is, you can't do that here. Oh, no. And I've had Rick Costales, who spoke earlier, told me, we don't want you to do that. Don't do that. You know, this is just unheard of throughout California. When a waterkeeper, we do this around the world, has this idea and wants to bring resources and training and equipment, you can't do that. So I'm just kind of over Siskiyou County and all the sway that they get just from being noisy and oppositional. What I do want to say is that as our science director, I really support the model that you guys have come up with. I think it's a good model and you put a ton of time into it. And we really support the comments that PCFFA, the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations, submitted analyzing that model, using professional scientists to review and strengthen it. And I want to make a note that Siskiyou County would like you to include Mike Diaz to amend that model and you know, make it more to the liking of Siskiyou County and PacifiCorps, and I would think that's a really bad idea. I'm not saying Mike Diaz isn't a smart guy. You know, he is really smart, so smart, in fact, that he manages to make all of his findings comply with the political inclinations of his clients, and for that reason has been called a biostitute by prominent scientists in this basin. The last thing we need is for Mike to go through and change up the model so that it suits PacifiCorps in Siskiyou County. And I think it really deserves reiteration that we're not trying to lump the Scott and Shasta TMDLs with the mainstem Klamath TMDL, like some speakers have said. The point is that the mouths of those rivers are part of the mainstem Klamath TMDL, and they need to be regulated as such. And you guys might not want to hear this, but the mainstem Klamath TMDL is going to have to become the tail that wags the dog on the Klamath River. Because if you let things stand how they are right now on the Scott and Shasta, even though there's lots of people working hard to improve practices, we're not going to have coho in those rivers in a few years. It's just, they're just not going to be there. And we're getting returns that you can count on two hands, and you're not doing anything substantive to fix the flow crisis, temperature problems in those rivers, then the weight of that extinction is going to be partially on you guys. And I also wanted to share just a brief story. In the course of this work, I've worked with a lot of people with a stake in the Klamath River, and I have made a friendship with a fisherman over in Coos Bay who couldn't be here today, partially because it's a really long drive, and partially because he's lost hope. And one of the last times I talked to him, he had just got back from the dump where he brought his boat, his fishing boat. He's been commercially fishing out of Coos Bay for 30 years and got to the point where he just couldn't do it anymore financially. And there's nobody on the Oregon coast that's going to buy a salmon fishing boat these days. A beautiful old boat straight to the dump to get, you know, pulled apart and made into other stuff or trashed. And, you know, when I call someone like that and say, hey, you know, Paul, I want you to come out to this meeting and tell your story. It's like, you know what I just did? I just brought my boat to the dump. I don't really feel like going to another public meeting and not being heard. And we hear those stories a lot, but you guys don't always hear them. And I think it's really important that you take them to heart because, again, it's your actions at the end of the day that are going to decide, you know, where this goes from here on out. And I didn't catch what happened with the suction dredging part of the TMDL, but it's not my understanding that the recent legislation as well as the court order are to temporarily halt the practice until regulations can be reviewed and analyzed by the state of California. And in that case, it's your responsibility to help provide the information on what suction dredging practices need to be allowed and how on the Klamath River in a way that the Klamath TMDL is still complied with. So we don't want to see that dropped. Like, that needs to be included and really detailed, because I don't know who else is going to do it. And then, you know, the last thing I really want to tell you guys, and I want to emphasize that we submitted our comments, our technical comments, already, and this is just, you know, some of the feedback I have after sitting through all this today, is that Klamath doesn't have a whole lot more time for us to sit around and whine about regulations. You know, we have the Clean Water Act for a reason, and it's time to implement that. And everyone tonight or today who said we need to have really strong enforcement mechanisms, we need to have a very clear timeline, and we need to get on it right away is correct, and that's what needs to happen. And whether you guys, or to the extent that you guys are able to support your staff in developing very tangible and specific targets and timelines and enforcement mechanisms, is the extent to which you're going to choose between keeping the status quo on the Klamath River or making these very serious changes. that we need to make in order to move forward. It's the extent to which you are going to be using science-based decision-making, or you're going to be pandering to political interests, like PacifiCorps. You're choosing between leaving a professional legacy of extinction or of restoration, and that is so deeply and intrinsically related to, again, making the choice between leaving a legacy of environmental injustice that punishes people for living downriver and for co-evolving with the Klamath River, or, on the other hand, finally taking some tangible and concrete action that begins to correct the 100 years of environmental racism our culture has perpetrated on the people who already lived here. So I just want to leave you with the idea that you guys have, more than just a job. Like most of us just have jobs. You guys have the ability to really make a change. The rest of us can sit here and whine and get emotional. We can make lawsuits, blah, 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 blah. But it's you guys at the end of the day that can correct some of these problems. And I just really, really hope that you take that to heart and that you do right by the Klamath, because we can't wait any longer. Thank you.
Thank you, Melina. Mike Bryan? And Mike is the last card I have, so last call.
Last and least, thank you for listening to me. Letters are very short.
That's what we like.
I'm Scott Valley Rancher. This is in regards to the Klamath River Total Maximum Daily Loads and Action Plan. The draft Klamath TMDL includes regulations on the Scott and Shasta, which already have TMDLs in place. This is an unnecessary duplication and an additional burden to landowners. The draft Klamath TMDL was not peer-reviewed in its entirety. Whoever reviews it needs to have some agricultural background. The Klamath TMDL does not address the negative impacts that an extra tier of regulations will have on the local economy. Beneficial use needs to include agricultural production of the farms and ranches in Siskiyou County, among other things. Without a viable agricultural economy, there will be little beneficial use. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Okay. We've come to the end then of public participation or public part of this workshop. There'll again be another session on the Klamath River TMDL October 28th, 29th. I'm not sure if it's not clear in my chair's brain if it's both days, one day, but we are scheduled to meet in Klamath on the 28th, 29th of October.
And at this point, this is Kat. We will come back on October 1st to give you an update as to whether one day, two, or if we're going to postpone to further refine our document.
All right. So it's, at this point, it's up to the board to give direction. Does the board want to direct that we take a break or wade in? Are you ready to give comment? 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they're ready to do nothing, I think. I can sense that.
I recommend we get along with this and get it over.
Ms. Coleman.
Mr. Anderson, I believe Mr. Leland has some comments. You had asked for some feedback earlier. Staff has put some thought into that, and I don't know if you want to have that before or after you.
Let's take staff's response to the, I assume that's regarding the modeling question and how we proceed. I think that's important to air that out and then to do a Heidi Harrison air the room out. Which is an inside joke, My apologies to everybody, but...
Good afternoon, members of the board.
Mr. Leland.
Thank you, sir. A couple of points that we would like to make. First of all, we disagree with PacifiCorps' characterization of the nature of the interaction on the modeling effort through the time that we were developing the TMDL. We had open communication with them until quite recently, and much more recently than the 3 years cited by PacifiCorps. On a separate but related point, we provided the model to USGS and the Bureau of Reclamation, and also to Dr. Diaz, who is a consultant to the Bureau of Reclamation, in May, prior to the beginning of the public comment period, in order to facilitate the USGS review. So just some clarifications there. With respect to the particular technical issues that have been raised, we acknowledge that GS rate has raised a number of important issues with respect to the model, but our review at this point finds that those comments fall into several large categories. One of those is areas where documentation of modeling decisions that were made was not adequate to describe the decisions that were made, but where we believe that additional clarification through the documentation will address the issues. The solar radiation issue that was raised by PacifiCorps is an example of one that falls into that category. Second, there are a number of housekeeping issues where, for example, parameters in different model runs were slightly different between the runs and shouldn't have been. We acknowledge that as well, but sensitivity analyses that we have done to date on that does not show any significant effects on the outcome or output of the model. Again, we haven't finished going through that whole exercise, but we don't see any reason to think, and our consultants don't either, that the other issues in that class would result in significant changes. Third, some of the comments were critical of aspects of the model that were not brought into play. Inactive subroutines in the model, and thus have no effect at all on the outcome. So we continue to review the comments that we've received and to look into them. We are at this point still assessing whether additional model runs may be required, if only to document the fact that the changes do not represent significant changes to the output. With respect to another issue that was raised or a suggestion that was raised, the standard procedure in this type of process is to prepare a detailed response to the comments that we have received. We propose to do that in this case. We believe that that response to comments will address the issues that have been raised and don't see the need at this time for a separate process, workshop or whatever. And in any case, see that as premature. I also wanted to note, just in a general sense, that what we're seeking in this exercise is not a perfect model or a perfect representation of the system. The Clean Water Act recognizes that there is inherent uncertainty in describing complex systems, which the Klamath is a complex system. What we are looking for is a reasonable characterization of such a complex system, not perfection. We think that we have a model that does that, and it's appropriate for the needs that we and purposes to which we are seeking to put it, and that it is adequate for for use in this TMDL. Also wanted to point out that we have a number of other lines of evidence that we developed in addition to this one particular tool that point to the same conclusions that the model does. So we're not relying on this as the only line of evidence that we have to understand what's going on with the system. So all of that said, we again are proposing to come back to you on October 1st with further clarifications on these issues and with an assessment of where this leads us, particularly in terms of effects on schedule.
Mr. Hales?
Mr. Leland, will that
On October 1st, when you come back, will you be summarizing the response to comments, or will it be the response to comments, the comments that were raised with respect to the modeling results, so the discrepancies between the two runs?
We will have more detail at that point, because we're continuing to investigate that.
Sure.
I'm not sure whether we will have, and I don't think that we will have the full response to comments, but we will certainly have more insight at that point than we have today.
May I add, envisioning at this point is that we would simply be reporting back to you, probably in the EO report, what the schedule will be. So I'm not envisioning at the October 1st meeting that there will be a discussion of content on the comments, but really just simply to let you know what the schedule will be to bring back to you what we hope would be a final draft.
And the comments that we've received from Mr. Hemsfeet and PacifiCorps, they have identified in his testimony that he's identified some fatal flaws, and we have those comments back, and so we can address those head on to give our opinion on that, to give staff's opinion on that.
We will be able to do that, yes.
Okay.
And Mr. Little, you'd mentioned at the beginning the comments here now about participation and working with the modelers over different parties over time. Did you run over that again? Because it was not clear. Listening to Mr. Hemstreet, there was like, well, we haven't been participating, but you're saying there has been.
So. We didn't bring with us today a history of the interaction, but one of the parts of the agreement that was executed with PacifiCorps at the time that the model was shared with us was that we would any enhancements that were made to the model would be shared back with PacifiCorps so that they would continue to have the most recent changes that had been made. We feel that we honored that commitment. I think that's the long and the short of it.
You did say provided it to the parties in May of this year?
Well, that was a slightly separate point, but we had a request from the Bureau of Reclamation, so this was not from PacifiCorps, but from the Bureau for the model so that they could initiate a review using USGS as their contractor. So we provided the code to them in May before the public comment period opened in order to help facilitate their review. That was more in the line of indicating our efforts at sharing and transparency and cooperation on this.
Mr. Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I ask, David, there was also a comment by PacifiCorps. This model was calibrated for the year 2000, correct?
Yes.
And then the estuary, I believe, was calibrated for 2004. In going and verifying that calibration, has staff provided or run different model years than using that model to verify, and how rigorous is that?
There was 2002 was used as a second year of data to corroborate the 2000 results for the main stem river model. I don't believe that there was another year was used for 2004, although Matt may be able to correct me on that. A little bit unclear on that point.
Well, so the model was actually calibrated for the year 2000. With respect to the estuary piece, that's a piece that was a new model component in addition to the basic framework that PacifiCorps had developed.
Right.
So that portion, the estuary, was calibrated to the year 2004.
Okay. And that's just because it's a different model, correct?
That's a different. It was calibrated to the year 2004 because we had done extensive water quality monitoring in the year 2004, so we had a data set to which to calibrate to.
Okay.
For the estuary, so that's the year that the estuary was calibrated for, and then we ran what we call a model validation or verification for the year 2002. And that was the upstream reach of the river. So from outlet of Upper Klamath Lake down to the state line was run for a second year, the year 2002.
Can I ask, too, in looking at comments that were posted prior to this meeting, Bureau of Reclamation had some substantive comments on the model and the outcomes of that model as well. Do they fit in? They were not a third-party reviewer like USGS, is that correct? Or how did they fit into that equation of review of that model and comments, too?
The Bureau requested the model for their for separate review. They hired USGS as a subcontractor to perform
it. Okay, so that's the nexus to USGS.
Yes.
Okay, and their comment...
I'm sorry. I just also wanted to make it clear, though, that the Bureau had done a review prior to the most recent review that was done by U.S. Geological Survey under contract with the Bureau. The Bureau did a review in 2005, and that was initiated both by their Klamath Falls office and their Denver office. So they had done a previous review of essentially the model, the basic model framework, so that they were reviewing the calibration of the model.
I would just stress my thought that I think that, you know, I think it's really imperative to take a really good hard look at this. I mean, Pacific Corps, the fact is that there's dams in the middle of an impaired water body that they're making decisions on, and there's outcomes that come with that, and I think it is imperative to get it reconciled in a sense to where the best we can, even if there's a difference in professional opinion at the end, that I think it's of paramount importance to make sure our model's solid that we're using and basing this whole premise and document on. It's the backbone of the whole TMDL and impairment. So I think it's incumbent upon us, and I say us collectively, to have as sure a footing in that realm as we can, because it carries all the way through this system.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Clayton?
Just one further clarification. When the model was provided to BOR as part of this May transfer, it was also provided to Dr. Diaz as part of that and subsequently, you know, used by him as well as part of that review. And I'm assuming as part of the review that Pacific Corps conducted as well.
Clayton, is there...
I'm not into a back and forth on this point. You made statements before, but Mr. Donnelly, you want to speak to us? You can answer my question as to what you want to speak about.
It was just a point of clarification to which the model was distributed.
To clarify, the model was distributed. To suggest that it was openly provided and that we had it in May is false. And we'd be happy to provide the request for more information up until, I believe, late July, when we still continue to get pieces of the model, including the pieces that uncovered some of the discrepancies that we've put for you today.
And if you would, identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Robert Donlin, Ellison Schneider and Harris for Pacific Corps.
All right. It will continue. I've lost my man Leland, but to Matt, our consultant Tetra Tech, have they been apprised of these questions to the model?
Very much so. They were the first to receive them. The minute I got them, I forwarded them on even before reviewing them. So, no, Tetra Tech has been very actively involved in our team's review of the models, and we have begun to provide the response to comments and do the additional documentation that we acknowledge is appropriate to be done. So that process is underway and will continue.
And is it... guy that has a master's in child development and family relations, I'm out of my element here, but the run time on doing a run, I mean, you know, it sounds like, well, if you just change two numbers and press the button and you find out what the outcome is on the other end, but it's my sense that the run time is...
The run time on the models, I believe, can be up to about 5 days. the preliminary assessment of kind of the level of effort if we were to do some model modifications and rerun the TMDL scenarios would be on the court on the order of several weeks to get that that done.
Okay, the board's going to take a break, a 10-minute break. We'll be back. Thank you. All right, board will be back in session, and we will seek guidance from our executive officer as to the task at hand.